Hello YouTube, and today I'm going to review The Dirty Dozen. A hit movie, a World War II movie that was made in 1967. Which I'm going to say was like the Expendables of the 60s. I mean, you had Lee Marvin, you had Charles Bronson, you had Donald Sutherland. You had Telly Savalas, Jim Brown, and Trini Lopez.
Got drunk and stole a chair last night, Nate.
Yeah, I saw some of that on Instagram.
Yeah.
Well, you just drunk on Allstate Arena beers? Is that what happened? Or did
yeah.
you guys do some, like, pre-gaming and show up to that pro wrestling show already lit up?
Well, you got to go to the O'Hare Hooters.
Ah, nice,
get
nice.
One of them Big Daddy beers while you're there, you know?
Uh-huh.
And then, yeah, then you just keep drinking Allstate Arena beers.
Okay, how much are those going these days? How many a pop is a... What is it, a nice cold Miller Lite? Is that what you're getting at the Allstate Arena? What are they serving there these days?
They had Goose IPA, at least.
Oh, Goose
which
IPA.
Which is drinkable.
Very fancy for...
Drinkable.
For an
Not
arena
my favorite.
Out by the airport, I'll tell you that much.
I hate Goose. I tell you what, you go to that Toyota Center Arena off...
Where the fuck's that at?
It's where BFG was. It's like Hoffman Estates.
I thought that was the Sears Center.
Well, it's Sears Center now, or... Toyotas. I don't know. Whatever it's called.
Listen,
but yeah.
We got to get our big corporations straight. We can't be putting misinformation out there.
They got nice beers there.
That's crazy.
But the Allstate, I don't know. I just
born a dump, it'll die a dump.
With one less chair in it.
Yeah. Where'd you spot that chair at? Was that the actual chair you were sitting in?
It was in the row that I was sitting in.
Okay.
It was on the end. Was at one of them wrestling shows, and you know, mm-hmm. if you sit on the floor, they got those like commemorative folding chairs.
I'm very aware.
And so there was a big bottleneck. We were at the bottom tier there.
Constantly troll eBay for past pro wrestling pay-per-view commemorative chairs.
Yeah.
I got a whole shed full of them in the back.
You're just waiting for somebody to get married in your backyard so you can set it
oh,
up
that's
with
gonna be perfect.
Commemorative wrestling chairs.
I didn't even think about that.
I was trying to, there was a big bottleneck where all the nerds were leaving with their chairs mm-hmm. and other nerds were trying to get in to mm-hmm. get unclaimed chairs. You know,
there's unclaimed chairs.
I
didn't
I
even
doubt
think
it.
About
there's
that.
There's probably like one or two people
like
that
chair
don't take
vultures
one.
That go to these
yeah.
things all the time. There's like, I'm not going to pay for the chair, but I'm going to try to sneak me one.
So security was being real, you know, hard asses about
oh,
it.
Those sons of bitches.
So I was just trying to point out to everybody, you just take one of these chairs.
Mm-hmm.
You just pick it right up.
Yeah.
And I did.
Nobody's guarding these ones.
I was like, you just have it.
Uh-huh.
And one of my brothers made a comment
paid
about
enough.
Like they put it down or something or...
All the brothers were out at this shindig.
Oh, yeah. Huh? Either way,
That wasn't a racial thing. I meant like all your brothers.
Right. Correct. I accepted their drunken challenge and waited for three or four people with commemorative chairs and just... stepped right in and walked right out
gotta,
the front door
just
with it.
Act like you're supposed to be doing
yeah.
it. Act like you own the place.
I just walked right out with it.
No, I'm supposed to have this chair.
And then I tried to get people to sign it.
Mm-hmm.
No one wanted to.
Like just people out in the parking lot or famous people?
I think they were famous.
Okay.
I was just going up to a lot of cars. Just seeing who would
glad you had a lovely
it.
Evening.
Yeah.
I just drank tequila for 6 hours straight.
Yeah.
It was also a lovely evening.
You're a big Sammy Hagar guy.
Steal nothing, drunk
also
on beer and committing thieveries.
Oh,
you should be ashamed of yourself.
On
Jesus's birthday week, is that what?
That's what Thanksgiving's
is that what
all about.
What's Thanksgiving again? I forget.
Oh, pilgrims were like, "Hey, Native Americans, mm-hmm. it's cool. Like, you don't got to worry about us." Does this mean we're not killing them anymore? Oh, no. We're still totally
it's to
gonna
commemorate
kill them.
The double cross. That's
yeah.
what it is. The day we
yeah.
double crossed the Native Americans.
Yeah, the big dinner at the
yeah,
double cross
I think
ranch.
It's important to to keep that going. Somebody had sent me a text the other day that was actually a screenshot of a tweet where somebody had made some sort of pithy comment like, it's crazy that Thanksgiving and Christmas are this close together. You mean I gotta see these people twice? And they were like, this reminds me of you. You famously hate seeing people.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, you're making a joke, but it's serious. It's stupid how close together these holidays are. It makes no goddamn sense.
Well,
if they were completely different, it'd be one thing, but you're generally going to the same place. You're cooking 90% of the same foods and doing the same thing twice.
That was going
to
be my complaint.
Twice within a fucking month? Like, it's crazy. At least come up with completely different foods for the two things.
Yeah, that's my biggest complaint right there. When we had more family alive or
before
whatever.
The crash.
Before the crash, we'd sometimes do like some lamb or like a giant steak or something.
There was one year where a lamb went down
on
at
Christmas.
One of my parties when I was a little child. I remember that.
That's a nice change of pace.
Or no, maybe I think that was a thing that always they did on Easter. I'm just remembering the one year I had to go there for Easter.
Oh, we used to do Greek Easter and roast an entire lamb.
Oh, fuck, that's Greek as hell.
Yeah.
See, like, even if you're going to split it like ham for fucking Christmas and then turkey for
ham.
And it's just like ham sucks, but at least it's a different thing.
Yeah,
my family, what they got going on now, I'm going to these things, they do ham and turkey for
both
of them.
Yeah,
it's fucking crazy. Yeah. It's the exact same meal twice.
I hate Thanksgiving dinner. It's so bland.
Oh man,
it's just not I'm just not a big fan of it.
Everything's beige,
right? It looks like a Land's End catalog.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody threw up a Land's End catalog.
Mm-hmm. Except for that splash of cranberry sauce, adding some color to the whole thing.
Yeah.
God bless that cranberry sauce.
Yeah, so I got...
Just put up lights for Thanksgiving and let's not do Christmas anymore. That's what I came up to. The only good thing about Christmas is all the nice lights that are around everywhere.
Yeah.
Just put up Thanksgiving lights and then we'll be done with it.
You ever go to like one of them rich neighborhoods where like...
No,
they
never.
They decorate this, the town decorates the residential streets and it just looks
fuck.
Looks like somebody, like a giant.
Never known anybody half rich enough for me to have seen that.
Giant walked up and down the street just jizzing lights all over the trees.
That sounds lovely.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah, the rich people got it going on in some ways. People got lights up in this neighborhood. They started going up like 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
It's already Christmas. Thanksgiving shouldn't even be a thing.
Yeah, I've seen quite a few.
At the very least, get rid of Thanksgiving, but I'd rather get rid of Christmas because that's really the one that's the true pain in the ass. That's the one that's making people kill themselves. It's not Thanksgiving that's making people kill themselves.
Yeah, I like how miserable Christmas makes people. I just kind of enjoy the melancholy of it.
You fall down that YouTube hole just watching people fight over presents at the Walmart or whatever.
Yep.
Yeah,
I watched that.
It's a good time.
While listening to a little Vince Guaraldi trio.
Yeah, some bittersweet, probably dead now, children's choir singing.
Oh, yeah. How many of those kids do you think are
dead? Now, right? Yeah, I would imagine so.
A good amount. It's got to be.
Or at least on their deathbeds.
Is that like, well, when did that get recorded?
That's got to be from the 60s.
50s.
Got to be.
50s, 60s. Yeah. Either way.
And as fat as Americans are, like, those people, their hearts have exploded years ago.
Christmas time is here.
We create 3 or 4 more holidays that are all based around binge eating. That's definitely what we need. More binge eating in this culture.
Yeah, I keep my holidays to binge drinking.
That's true.
Like a gentleman.
Just like my normal days.
That's right. There's one thing we hate, it's change.
6 hours of drinking tequila last night, Matt.
Yeah.
Every time I was about to leave, somebody else came in and wanted to drink with me. I'm just too popular for my own good. Too popular.
You are the Cheers.
Mm-hmm.
All of them.
Yeah.
You're all the Cheers.
The Norm, Reggie.
Oh.
Little Jerry. It's been a long time since
Billy
I've
D.
seen. It's been a long time since I've seen Cheers.
Oh, boy.
I remember Woody.
It's Baby Oil and Blow. It is a action extravaganza.
We started on Thanksgiving.
Complain about stuff and then talk about movies.
Mm-hmm.
But we always got to complain first. Because if you're not...
It's tradition.
Yeah. Damn it. This is our vehicle to do so. And, you know, you're stuck listening to it. So
that's right.
Get a better life, you dumb. You know? You're an idiot.
Stuck.
You're a stupid idiot. Look at you. You're just sitting here listening to this.
Who's stuck doing this?
I'm calling you names. You're just taking it.
What would you have to do to get stuck listening to this?
Don't hit yourself.
Imagine if you're like in a relationship with somebody or something who like
babe, I'm like really listening to this podcast. I'm really into this cool podcast.
You're just like some poor woman who's like stuck sitting there.
You know all those movies you hate watching?
Idiot boyfriend.
Idiots get drunk to this
fucking garbage. That's like the worst life I can imagine. If there's really a person out there like that, I'm sorry. I'm sorry about your life.
If that's the case, write to us or something. Yeah. Get a hold of us.
That's right.
And we will dump your boyfriend for you.
Get into our DMs on that Instagram. Yeah, we'll tell that tell that sucker on air that he's done for. Yeah. Hit the bricks.
Dude, she's been balling old Reggie from Cheers for a while now.
No.
It's over.
I just bought Christmas presents.
But
wish I would have known this a week ago.
It's cool. You can return those Amazon gifts at any Kohl's. They'll send them out for you.
It's very convenient.
I got the
new little niece, and I was trying to figure out what to buy a five-month-old human being for Christmas, and people were giving me a lot of dumb fucking advice. I didn't like it all. And then one girl who works for me was just like, get the kid a stuffed animal. It might end up being that one stuffed animal they love for the entire rest of their life and never give up. And I was like, you know what? That's a really optimistic piece of advice I like.
Yeah.
So I bought her a little stuffed Jason Voorhees. He's adorable.
I was going to say, nice. You went weird, right?
It went totally weird. That's like half my Christmas shopping done already.
I got drunk at Bush.
It's not even Thanksgiving yet.
I got drunk at Bush Gardens once.
I got drunk at Bush Gardens is a great country song.
Yeah.
Is that what we're talking about?
I know. I won one of them giant
real life
stuffed gremlins. Not the Mogwai, but the gremlin.
Okay, full on gremlin.
I was like, I'm going to give this to
like a stripe. We talking about a stripe?
Yeah, cool. Exactly. I was like, my nephew's going to love this shit. And he was really young at the time. And I gave it to him. And Nate.
Mm-hmm.
Turns out he did not like the stuffed gremlin that was like his size.
Oh, what a little fucking turd.
Yeah.
I hate that story.
Ungrateful.
Give that kid back.
I need to find that and get it back.
Yeah, we could be doing cool things with that gremlin.
Oh, it's Baby Oil and Blow. We are your hosts. I am Matt O.
I was wondering if you were going to remember to finish the introduction.
I always do. If there's one thing I love to talk about, it's who we are.
That's right.
You, sir, you are the... You could be the norm to my Cliff Clavin.
Oh, nice.
You are Nate Adams.
Ahoy, hoy, everybody. It's great to be here in our final week of November. Thanksgiving week, the final week, more importantly, though, of our hashtag Go Nuts November event, where we've been talking about wars and troops and veterans and just paying tribute to them by being super respectful in the way we talk about them all month long, which you're welcome, everybody out there.
Don't forget, it's Go Nuts November. Mm-hmm. It's got dual meaning.
That's right.
So your Thanksgiving isn't complete until you go off on somebody in your family and then rub one out in the bathroom while everybody's eating dinner.
Oh, man. Did you finally get that chance to escape away to your murder shed in the back and just, you know, like smoke a cigarette and look at all the Playboy centerfolds hung up? Just take a breather.
Just rub one out in the murder
holidays
shed.
Holidays can be stressful.
Because you just slapped Aunt Sally.
We've had a lot of stuff going on. We've had a Rutger Hauer movie for no reason.
For the best
reason. We had a Veterans Day event. 35th anniversary.
I don't even remember
fucking
what movies we watched.
Missing in Action.
At this point.
Like, it's been a lot of big stuff.
Was there something in between those two?
Yeah, it was fucking Rambo for
Rambo.
Day.
Yeah.
You remember Rambo? John Rambo.
Yeah, that's the one I like.
We got to come up with something big to cap this off, something Thanksgiving appropriate. So, picked a big one. It's no joke. This was a long movie, man.
Yeah.
This took up, like, most of my day.
Yeah. Hey, Jessica and Brittany, I apologize to you right now because Kyle's making you listen to like a 2-hour podcast this week.
Oh, Jesus.
This is going to be a long one.
We're going to shoot through this real quick. It's going to be no problem. Let's get into the rundown here. The rundown is brought to us this week by Stovetop Stuffing.
Ooh, hell yeah.
It's
a one thing I do like.
It's a ballsy fucking, you know, company right there, Stovetop. They used to have those 80s commercials where they'd be like, people don't want potatoes anymore, they want stuffing. And then like they do like the potatoes versus stuffing challenge.
Hey, Idaho, go fuck yourself.
It's like, Stovetop, I like that you're shooting for the stars, but come on. I can see trying to get a place at the table, but trying to replace potatoes on everyone's plate, like, that's not gonna happen, Stovetop. You were fucking crazy.
But they also had the commercials where it was like, Vinny's mom's making stovetop.
Yeah, those were the 90s commercials.
My dad's.
I like those
much more.
My
mom's making stovetop too.
They just started celebrating how awesome chicken and stovetop was and making kids like create schemes to eat more chicken and stovetop.
Yeah, which
it's
also
much better than disparaging potatoes.
Contributed to that American obesity problem we just
That's probably true. Yeah. Stovetop can't be good for you.
And then there was the Chicken Tonight commercials.
Yeah, that one had the great song. What was Chicken Tonight?
Just like ragu.
Okay, I was gonna say, because like you just buy a chicken to eat chicken. You can't like make boxed chicken. That doesn't sound possible to me.
You can just like cook
it's
it
just
up
like some sauce to dump on a chicken.
Yeah, our mom made it once.
Need that.
Our mom made it once, and we were like, never again.
Mm-hmm.
We'll do shake and bake, but you're not pulling
sounds
this
like
shit
an
on us.
Answer in need of a question. Nobody was asking for goop to put on their chicken. Stovetop, though, I could probably eat, like, a couple pounds of that.
You ever just pop the top and eat a little bit of that dry?
No. I've never bought stovetop on my own. It was something that would go down, like, back in the 90s. My mom would make it every once in a while, but does it still exist? Do families out there still eat stovetop?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, that's good to hear. That's good to hear.
It's the best.
The rundown is of 1967's The Dirty Dozen.
This is the same year that brought us Sergeant Pepper, Pet Sounds, Odyssey, and Oracle.
That's three big albums right there. None of those songs made it on this soundtrack, unfortunately.
No,
that would have been nice.
I'm just setting the tone, like, this is what was going on in life.
All
this
that
is the
shit.
Movie that
and then
out.
This fucking movie came out.
Yeah.
Runtime, 150 minutes. Long, long past our general 90-minute runtime we try to go for. But, you know, when you're talking war epics, this sort of thing generally happens. Budget, $5.4 million. That's $5.4 million in 1967 dollars. You kind of
like
got to think.
That's like a trillion now.
Yeah, I don't know what the math is, but this looks like a pretty expensive movie for $5.4 million.
Yeah.
Let's just think about what's happened to money. It's crazy. The gross, $45.3 million, which is apparently a gigantic success at the time. Now it would be like the hugest failure. Anybody like, oh, we made a movie and it only made $45 million.
Yeah.
What a bomb. We're living in a different world here.
Living in
Director,
a material world.
Old Robert Aldrich did shit like Kiss Me Deadly, which is a noir that I really like. A couple Burt Reynolds movies, including The Longest Fucking Yard, which is another great man movie.
I love when he's walking past the secretary in the beginning of the movie, and he's like chomping on his gum in the old Burt Reynolds way.
He's good at chomping.
He's like, you ever done a standing up before? And she's just like, oh, well, oh, this guy, what a rapscallion.
You're allowed to say things like this in my current era.
Yeah,
okay.
It's pretty cool.
The stars here, there's a lot of them, because there's literally like...
There's a dozen.
The Dirty Dozen is talking about like literally 12 guys. So
that's not even covering the other cast.
I'm
going to
shoot through this real quick. I'm going to go through like the whole lineup real quick here.
I'll see if you leave anybody out.
Lee Marvin's playing Major Reisman. He's in charge of the Dirty Dozen.
Correct.
He's our main character. Ernest Borgnine's playing Sam Warden. He's one of the dudes who gives Marvin his mission. George Kennedy's playing Mark's Armbruster. He's a higher up also involved. He's the one who's not an asshole. Robert Ryan is playing Everett Dasher Breed, who is an asshole fucking higher up, who's got a huge rivalry going on with Lee Marvin. Richard Jekyll, he plays Borin, who's a military police, who's sort of Marvin's right-hand man in training the Dirty Dozen. Then we have our Dirty Dozen. Charles Bronson playing Wladyslaw. He's the dude who can speak German.
Hey, I'm Polish.
Jim Brown's playing Jefferson. He's the token black dude.
He quit football to finish this movie.
Very true. John Cassavetes is playing Franco, the sort of the wild card.
He's the daddy of Nick Cassavetes, who was on at the beginning of our
He was in Blind Fury playing one of the bumbling goons.
Yeah.
Did a very good job. See where he got it from his daddy. Trini Lopez is playing Jimenez, the guitar-playing one who mysteriously disappears before the third act begins.
He breaks his neck in the parachute.
That's right, he does.
He also played Trini in the Power Rangers.
Yeah. Story there is apparently that Frank Sinatra convinced him that his singing career was too hot right there, and he should be touring and making money, and being an actor was holding him back, so he just quit in the middle of the movie. So they just wrote in like, he broke his neck during the jump. He's not in the movie anymore.
Really?
Yeah, that's the story.
I Sinatra's kind of a dick.
Telly Savalas is
playing... No, your acting sucks, kid.
He's playing Maggot, the creepy religious serial killer guy in the group.
Telly.
Clint Walker's playing Posey, the gigantic, super handsome one with the temper.
Illinois native.
And then you got, like, the other six who were just kind of nobodies. The first was Donald Sutherland, who became not a nobody.
He became He's a somebody.
Playing Pinkley, the stupid one. Then you got Al Mancini playing Bravos, Tom Busby playing Vladek, Ben Carruthers playing Gilpin, Stuart Cooper playing Lever, and Colin Maitland playing Sawyer. I don't know who any
None
of those guys are or like, yeah,
me.
What
yeah.
Any of those characters are. They're just there to fill out the dozen. There's 12 of them. What do you want from this movie?
I literally just watched this and could
what
not
do you want
tell
from
you
this movie?
Who those six guys are.
Tagline, train them, excite them, arm them, then turn them loose on the Nazis.
Okay.
Plot. We got a plot here.
Very excellent plot when the Major gets, when Major Reisman played by Marvin is tasked to pick 12 soldiers out of a military prison who had death sentences or long hard labor sentences for a very hard mission, strict, where I'm look for here. Come on. A very dangerous mission. Which, we all know, ain't accurate, but movies ain't supposed to be accurate, as we all know.
The soldiers, most of whom are facing death sentences for a variety of violent crimes, agree to the mission and the possible commuting of their sentences. The Dirty Dozen. Let's get into bullet points, Matt.
Yeah, bullet points.
You about to lay down a rap track?
No, I
okay,
forgot
good.
How.
I was gonna be amazed if that happened.
Yeah, the movie starts out in a military prison in the UK.
Yeah, that's right. Everything here is shot in the UK, I think, right?
I think the whole movie was shot overseas there, or most of it was in the UK.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But they're in a jail for folks that were in the war and committed some kind
That's
of
right.
war crime.
Yeah, we start off with the fucking hanging. This movie starts off with the guy just begging and pleading for his life, and then he gets hung, and everybody just stares at him stone-faced.
This was a real thing.
It really sets the tone.
Yeah, this was a real thing in World War II.
But they really hung that guy?
No, they really took a jail from the 1600s in London and used it to lock up American soldiers.
Yeah.
Like the Americans.
Like the assholes?
This very
right.
exact idea.
Yeah. Cause
and they did hang people.
From what I understand, this
movie
British
dude.
Comes from a book which came from such story that's true in some sort of way.
Yeah.
From what I understand, there really was a group of guys. In real life, they were called, hilariously, the Filthy 13.
Right.
Why change that to Dirty Dozen? Filthy 13's pretty cool, and it's one more guy.
Because they could barely round out the cast of the
I guess
dozen,
that's true,
man.
Yeah. They were fucking rounding up dudes from Canada trying to get actors.
I don't know. Let's just make it 12.
Mm-hmm. We already got one guy quitting.
Let's call
this other guy might
12.
Go back to football at any moment. We're not sure. 13's pushing it.
This thing might not be getting made.
I don't know exactly how true of a story this is based on. I'm guessing very loosely.
I just know the jail part was true.
Because the concept's ridiculous.
And they really killed a lot of people
mm-hmm.
by hanging.
It was war. War is hell.
Yeah. So is hanging people.
Mm-hmm.
That's fucked up.
So this is where we meet Lee Marvin. He's watching this hanging. And then he gets escorted out, like he's kind of just like stone faced. And then he has to go talk to his higher ups.
I'm talking.
And this is all happening just in like a normal, nice looking, like officer's like office. You know, there's books around, nice desks and whatever. But regardless, Ernest Borgnine and George Kennedy are just sweating their fucking asses off, man.
Like, is that barbiturates?
I don't know. Is the stage lighting that intense? Or, like, George Kennedy, famously in fucking Cool Hand Luke, is the sweatiest man on screen in film history. So, like, was there ever a time when George Kennedy wasn't sweating ever is what I'm wondering right now?
And who was in charge of casting? It was like, you know who'd make a pretty good general? Ernest Borgnine.
Get us all of the fattest, sweatiest men you can possibly find.
Ernest Borgnine's that dude that, like, you're out in public somewhere, and, like, he totally just cuts a audible fart.
Oh, yeah.
And just no sells
you. That guy's just got no control of just, his farts. You know
just
it.
Just no sells
you. On our couch today, we're going to talk to you in the After the Show show, but real quickly, you're 91 years old. You look fantastic. You look like you're in your late 60s, early 70s. What's the secret?
I don't dare tell you.
No meat. You don't eat meat.
I masturbate a lot.
Okay, I think... thank you, Ernie. That was great.
I actually heard that.
Ernie, have you ever been on YouTube before that?
Listen, listen. Yesterday...
What are you talking about? I like this guy.
Okay, we're going to take a quick time out. He'll be in the After the Show show. Log on to foxandfriends.com.
After the old pay-per-view last night.
Oh, you went to a wrestling event and then a casino? The story's getting scummier by the second.
And we were all full of beer.
Uh-huh.
Dave and I were just doing a lot of casual farting as we were walking through seas of people.
Crop dusting fucking gross Illinois casinos.
That's right. That Rivers. Whew, took some heat. We're Ernest Borgnine. Uh-huh. That's my story.
Well, thank you. It's very off-putting.
Life.
So anyways, they're telling Borgnine, or Borgnine is telling Marvin the whole thing, like, hey, Marvin, like, you're an asshole. Nobody likes you. So we're giving you a shitty mission that nobody wants to do. You're insubordinate. You cocky fuck. And this is when we start, like, getting to see Marvin being a cocky fuck. He's really back-talking like a rebellious teenager. I'm starting to think, like, this guy's pretty cool. Like, I like this Lee Marvin right here.
Pointing out the errors in their ways.
He don't take no guff, and he's a little unorthodox, but he gets things done, Matt. That's what we learn about him right now. He's probably my favorite type of character in anything.
Results.
The guy who's an asshole, but he gets results.
Yeah.
It's like how I see myself in life, except that I don't generally get results.
Yeah.
But I try to be like that.
Yeah, absolutely. You got to. It's what you aspire to do.
So it's laid out for him, like, you know, we're going to give you 12 asshole criminals, degenerates. You're going to have to make them a team, and then you're going to go on a suicide mission to kill all these fucking German officers who are, like, balling hookers up in this French chateau they took over.
Lee Marvin's really...
Get to it.
He's really good in this scene, though.
Yeah.
He's
awesome in this whole movie.
Great at delivering these lines that he has where he's, like, smart talking, but he's, like, doing it very cleverly and, like, not so in your face
clearly
or rude.
No respect for these people.
Yeah.
But, you know, they got him by the balls. He's in that system. He's caught up in that military system.
Like, they were asking him about the hanging, and he was like, yeah, it was fucking terrible. Like, why would you
ask me how the hanging was?
And they're like going back and forth, and he's like, well, why don't you ask Private Stan whatever? And they're like, Ernest Borgnine's like, who's that?
Yeah.
He's like, the object of our exercise we were discussing.
Fucking dude who got hung. Asshole.
Love the way he says it.
Begging and pleading for his life 2 minutes ago.
Object of the exercise we were just discussing.
Yeah, he's got like just disdain in his eyes. At like every fucking, unless he's wildly firing a machine gun, like he's just angry through this whole movie.
Yeah, he's pretty cool. So, he hasn't decided. He's been told he's going to do it.
He's volunteering.
Quote, unquote.
There's no decisions going on
here. There's strong arming our guy here. So, the only logical thing left is, well, time to meet the Dirty Dozen.
Yeah, and then we get the fucking roll call, which I really like. He's got them all lined up.
Great setup, yeah.
Yeah, fucking, like, the camera goes down the line. The camera lingers on them while we hear their name and what their sentence is. Everybody gets to do like a tiny little bit of acting. It's just like real nuts and bolts filmmaking and a real concise, just like easy way to dump a lot of information and like build a lot of character all in just one stylized little military roll call. You got some like military drum music going in the background. It makes you just want to go out to war.
And they're doing that 60s show you the credits still at the beginning of the movie.
Oh, yeah. I like that shit.
It's good stuff.
The slow roll out of the credits
as shit's happening.
And basically, like, these guys are all jailbirds. So, like, you got to do this by jail rules. You got to establish dominance. So fucking Lee Marvin just stomps one of their heads in, like, first thing. Just to be like, this ain't like normal fucking army. Like, this is... prison rules, motherfucker. Like, talk back. You're going to fucking get your head stomped in.
Yeah. Lee Marvin's a big man, too. I mean, he's...
Yeah.
He's older here, but he's...
actual World War II veteran. As
right,
were a lot of the fucking dudes in this movie, just yeah, like a legit badass, and it comes across.
He hated a lot of this, or he hated the movie for the most part.
Uh huh.
Because he said it just really had nothing to do.
So ridiculous
with
and
what
stupid.
Any of them really experienced
with actual
in the war.
World War II. Yeah.
Yeah. And then on top of that, he's like, plus like the majority of us are too old to be playing fucking soldiers.
Very true. These boys out there, 18 and 19 years old, these guys are all fucking in their 30s and shit.
I found a list somewhere of all the characters that were in World War II.
Uh-huh.
And boy, it was a lot of them.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
This, turns out a lot of people had to go to war back then.
Yeah.
They didn't have drones.
Drones
have made things so much easier.
Yeah, also you can get your Amazon packages that way.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, just
perfect.
Just convenient.
But yeah, fucking old John Cassavetes here. He is the one who speaks out.
Franco,
he's the one that
number
gets
11.
His head fucking stomped in Franco. And like, this guy, he's a little prankster. He's mischievous. And instantly, he's got to be your favorite character. Like, everybody's favorite
hell
character's
yeah,
got to be Franco, right?
Got to.
The Weasley back-talking asshole. He's... You could tell he's a slick dude. He's always got a grift going on. I bet he pulled mad trim before he had to go away to the war.
Hell
like,
yeah.
This guy's talking his way into
hell
a
yeah,
lot of panties. You could totally tell.
Hey, real quick, raise your glass to...
doing a little toast here?
Well, yeah. We got to toast Mr. Cassavetes.
Uh-huh.
One of our own. Went down with cirrhosis of the liver.
Oh, chin chin.
Died
yeah,
at about the age of 59.
After directing a lot of really... artsy and cool fucking yeah, movies, starring in a lot of cool movies.
He made like, his own movies.
I
he financed his own
death,
shit. He was like the first indie guy. He was the Fugazi of filmmaking, if you will, you
mm-hmm,
know? Real quick. Lee Marvin, Telly Savalas, Charles Bronson, Ernest Borgnine, Clint Walker, Robert Ryan, and
oh,
George
man,
Kennedy... all served
all
in World
served
War
in
II.
What the fuck did Borgnine do in World War II? I cannot picture him
farts,
doing anything other than cutting farts around the barracks.
Like, he could have been like a Bill Dolltreve, like just cutting hair in the army.
Oh, yeah, I could definitely like, see that.
Next up, son, I'm going to cut your hair. Get
I
a
mean,
real nice
I would
crew
watch
cut,
a movie with Borgnine playing a fucking army barber, like for sure. That sounds like a good time.
Oh, man, if you make it like a weird Coen Brothers, what was that? What was that Man Who Wasn't There where
yeah,
old boys cutting hair.
Billy Bob Thornton as a barber movie.
Yeah,
very, very underrated picture in my opinion.
If you combine that with like, but make it a war thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Frank.
Huh?
This hair.
Yeah.
You ever wonder about it?
What do you mean?
On coming. It just keeps growing.
Yeah. Lucky for us.
No, I mean it. It keeps growing. It's part of us. And we cut it off and throw it away.
Come on, Eddie. You're gonna scare the kid.
My next note going on here is just, holy shit, Telly Savalas just said the N-word.
Oh, yeah.
So, I don't know, yeah. Basically, like,
yeah,
we get all the guys together, and, like, we're talking to him, we're telling him the mission, we're telling him the deal, and then he drops the N-word. Fucking old Jim Brown just starts beating the hell out of him.
Right.
And then we get some more cool fucking Lee Marvin shit, because he just, like, casually walks out of the room and pretends like it's not happening and just lets this big brawl happen.
Yep.
You could tell this guy's raised boys, because he's just, like, just fucking let them beat the shit out of each other.
Yeah, that's how you
tucker
take care of that
themselves out. Like, that's yeah, how this is going to get over.
Yeah, I'm not even going to bring up the Norm MacDonald, Telly Savalas story. I'll let you just drop it in here.
Okay.
I watch old TV shows.
Yeah.
And it was the first Kojak. You remember Kojak?
Telly Savalas.
Telly Savalas.
With and, the lollipop.
Yeah, he had the lollipop going. So for the pilot, it was Crocker's first day. You know, Kevin Dobson played Crocker.
Sure, Crocker.
So he was just out of police academy. Green. They kept yeah, saying how green he was. Kojak had been around a long time. He knew everything. So he's, you know, has this green kid, and he doesn't know if he wants to be working with him. So what was happening was prostitutes were being murdered.
Oh,
know?
My.
He goes, go down and try to get some information from the prostitute's mother. So a little while later, Crocker comes back. I talked to her mother. She wasn't a prostitute at all. She was a good, good girl. Yeah. So Kojak's seen it all, right? So he takes this lollipop and goes, yep, she was a good girl. Mama's apple pie. The 4th of July. She was a hooker! Crocker was too green to see it, you know?
She's a whore.
She's a whore.
Oh, Telly Savalas.
Kojak, good show.
Did you watch that?
I've seen a little bit of it.
I think I need to get into it. After watching this performance, I need to get into it.
Yeah, he's just so greasy looking.
Yeah,
They're called the Dirty Dozen because, like, later on it happens they're not bathing or they're not shaving, but like this is before that happened, and I'm just like sitting here thinking about just how greasy and gross fucking Telly Savalas looks.
Everybody's got like piddly crimes because they go through and tell you all their crimes, and like some people like killed people or robber or this and whatever, but like
that's right.
Telly Savalas, his character Maggot, AJ Maggot, has some rape charges.
Yeah, it's just basically like raped a woman to death,
and it's very like obvious, like, oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah, this guy is like fucking straight up like Maniac, that movie Maniac.
Correct.
About the greasy serial killer. Like, he's got some of that going on in this war movie. I'm buying this guy fucking like beating and raping women to death.
Yeah.
It's all got like a weird religious, like,
I
hate loose women vibe to it too. Like,
Lee Marvin
shit going on
goes
here.
Through all of them to kind of be like, hey, why'd you do what you did?
Yeah, fucking like Jim Brown
crew.
Beat up some dudes for being racist or whatever. Yeah. Like fucking Charles Bronson shot a guy for deserting.
Yep.
Like, you know, shit like this is going on.
And he's like,
with
hey,
Telly Savalas,
like, why'd you do that?
He's a serial killer.
He's like, oh, why do you ask? Because Jesus told me to.
Yeah, which is like, this is maybe one of the biggest stretches of this movie. Like, okay, I get the conceit. We're taking some guys who have, like, they're expendable because they're going away. They're good, but like... Mm-hmm. You don't throw a literally insane serial killer onto this mission. Like, this guy can just die. Like, just hang this guy. There's nothing. This guy's just going to muck up your fucking plans.
Oh, you know what? We're good with 11.
Yeah.
11's good. We don't need 12.
Clint Walker, that dude punched a guy and killed him with one punch, apparently.
Yeah.
That guy's fucking gigantic.
Yeah.
He looks like the comic book drawing of Superman just came alive.
That dude's... just huge. And he's always got that 12 o'clock, 5 o'clock shadow going on.
Strong jawline, just dense with muscle. Like, you're just going to draw the perfect man. He's fucking there.
Like, they weren't building dudes like this back in the 60s
either.
Yeah,
like, this is before all the fucking big bodybuilding, like, techniques and shit blew up and everybody was just getting ripped to be in fucking Hollywood and shit.
I mean, Jim Brown's obviously in good shape because he's coming straight out of the NFL here.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, this guy's just a specimen.
Dwarfs everyone.
Yeah.
Fucking standing next to big-ass Lee Marvin, making him look like a little baby.
Yeah. Oh, man, I didn't even think about that. Yeah, because we get that scene where they're fighting over the knife. He's like, you know, stab me, yeah. And, like, the whole thing is he's showing Lee Marvin's, he's unorthodox because, like, everybody's like, oh, these guys are going to try and kill you the first chance.
He's not just
they get
the man. He's also a wild card.
And he's like, how do you out crazy? You got to crazy like a fox. Mm-hmm. That's what you got to do.
One of the next scenes I remember after this is when fucking Cassavetes tries to escape in the middle of the night. And they got deal going on that if anybody tries to escape, the whole thing's over and they all get hung.
Right.
So, like, they all find out that he's doing it and they circle around him and he's trying to cut his way out of the fence. And then they just beat the shit out of him. Yeah. This is just the second serious ass whooping that Cassavetes takes in this movie.
Like, yeah, Lee Marvin.
Not even, like, a third of the way into it.
Lee Marvin literally stomps Cassavetes' face in the opening credits.
Yep. And then fucking Charles Bronson bitch slaps him like a full-on literal bitch slap in this scene. It's a nice little thing because he's like the cool guy who like seems like he should be the character you like and like you want to relate to the most. But then he's just always getting punked out by everyone. So you're like, well, he's kind of a bitch. I don't really like that.
Yeah. It's a lot of mouth and But it's all part of Lee Marvin's plan here, you know?
Some more off-the-wall shit when Trini Lopez can't climb up the rope and he fucking Lee Marvin machine guns the rope right under his legs so he can't climb down. And you get some more like, oh, this guy's not playing by the rules. These Dirty Dozen guys. This isn't your typical war movie, which is why we're watching it, because not only do I consider it to be a great, just like masculine old man movie that, if you're watching it on cable with commercials, will eat up an entire boring fucking afternoon where you're stuck with family. But just like, it's not your typical war movie. It's completely different. I generally find like actual war movies that are about actual war to be pretty boring.
That's fair.
Even when I was a kid and like you should be into like war and shit, not something I was ever super stoked to sit through.
Yeah.
But this one's different. It's just a bunch of crazy assholes acting crazy.
Except Glory. You love that because of Matthew Broderick.
Matthew, if there's anybody has ever looked like a more believable soldier on screen than Matthew Broderick, I'd like to see it.
Yeah.
That guy really pulls it off.
Show me.
Man is a fighting machine.
Goddamn right he is. You remember that mustache he had? Just unbelievable.
Eventually, we do get to the inciting incident where they become the Dirty Dozen. This is another thing in my notes here where fucking the, you know, the wild card, old Cassavetes, he's always bellyaching. He's always got a problem.
Yeah.
He's always the one that's going to get everybody complaining. He starts whining about them having to shave with cold water.
Yeah.
And they're all like, yeah, fuck it. Like, they've all hated him up to this point, but like, they're on board with this cold water thing. Like, oh, we refuse. I was like, it's not that bad to shave with cold water.
Yeah, I mean,
I shave with cold water all the time. Just, you know, because I'm doing it quick.
Yeah.
These guys are fucking whiners.
You're technically...
This is their problem?
Technically, you're supposed to shave with cold water.
That's what I've always heard. That's what I've always heard.
Yeah, makes the metal contrast.
I want to just, like, sit these guys down and be like, listen, you fucking pussies, like... You're out here building your own barracks to sleep in and shit. Like, you got your fucking head in the mud, Forrest Gump style and shit.
True.
Cold water, this is the big bitch. This is the big gripe.
Yeah.
Seemed weird. It seemed like some sort of, like, generational thing that I didn't get where it's just like, shaving's the most important thing a man does or whatever.
I'm a man.
You used to just have, like, a lot of... things about shaving, I feel like, back in the day. Like, oh, your dad sits you down and teaches you how to shave.
Yeah,
because, you know, like, it's a process you have to learn. Ain't nobody ever teach me how to shave. You fucking drag a razor over your hair.
And I don't, you know what I'm thinking
you
about?
You don't glorify shaving anymore.
What's that sexy Richard Gere, Diane Lane movie? Unfaithful?
Unfaithful, yeah.
Yeah, where he's shaving her legs in the tub. No, I'm confusing that. Now I'm back to...
You're confusing, yeah.
Yeah.
Billy Bob Thornton shaving Francis McDormand's legs in The Man Who Wasn't There. There is a bathtub scene that's Diane Lane pulls off.
Yeah,
it's got
really
something
hot.
Sexy going on in that movie.
I
remember
he's
that.
Just finger blasting her in the tub there.
It's just a bathtub finger blasting. There's no weird shave shit going on.
Billy Bob Thornton shaving old girls.
There's one thing
legs.
That movie did that was just fucking impressive as hell, The Man Who Wasn't There, is that they did just make Frances McDormand seem sexy there for a minute. Like,
yeah.
I don't know how they pulled it off.
Carefully? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know.
Mm-hmm. It worked, though.
Great filmmakers, those Coen brothers.
So, Franco goes off, and everybody else agrees with him. And Lee Marvin's like, this is good. This is what we wanted.
Oh, yeah. He's like, secretly happy that we're gonna get some bonding shit going on here. Like, I'm gonna get them together as a unit by making them have shared trauma.
If they're all mad, they're mad together.
Yeah, it's the
they're
whole
team,
like
though.
Hazing people to join your frat theory. Like, once you go through a traumatic experience together, you're unnaturally bonded. So,
and
like,
it's no longer gay. Whatever
everybody
you guys do together,
chug
with
a
your
handle
penises.
Of Jim Beam and then butt fuck these farm animals, and then we're brothers for life.
Well, no matter what goes into your butthole after that, it's cool.
Yeah. As long as you've shared a traumatic
you're
experience,
still straight.
Welcome.
Hi.
Hey. You guys seem pretty cool. Take these for later. Rubbers? What do we need rubbers for?
Let the initiation begin.
Have you ever made love to a woman?
Yes.
No.
Yes.
No.
Yes.
No.
So where are we at then? They're the Dirty Dozen.
Yeah, they
now.
Train, they get better, but then eventually they got to go to old Breeder's fucking camp or whatever to learn how to skydive.
Yeah, that's where they're going to do the parachoping.
Breeder's the asshole fucking general or whatever that fucking hates Lee Marvin.
Yeah.
So we get a lot of shit going on here where, like, he doesn't know why these guys are here. He doesn't like it. It's all top secret shit. He wants to know who they are and what they're doing. So he starts having his guys, like, fucking go around snooping. We get a couple of dudes who, like, corner Charles Bronson in the fucking bathroom and, like, beat the shit out of him. They're like, tell us who you are and what you're doing. And he's like, no. And a couple more of the Dirty Dozen pop in and, like, save him.
My name's number 9.
This is weird because you get to, like, Charles Bronson gets the shit beat out of him, and then he's just kind of like, he's selling. Like, he's like fucking whimpering and shit. It's just like they're dragging him away and he's really hurt. And I'm like, oh, I've never seen Charles Bronson not just be a complete fucking unfeeling badass ever. Yeah. He's acting like a real human man in this movie.
In all fairness, though, they kick the ever loving shit out of him, and he's like hurting real bad. And they're like, you're going to tell us your name. And he's like, my name is number 9. And they beat him up some more, and he's like, okay, I'll tell you.
Yeah.
And he's making all the noises, and they lean in, and they sucker punches one of them.
A good sucker punch. Like, I'm always a big fan of.
He was hurting, but he's still throwing punches.
Not too hurt to sucker punch somebody.
So he still gets credit. But yeah, Clint Walker and Jimmy Brown show up.
Yeah. Fucking talk about, like, these fucking dudes beating up Bronson are wieners, too. Can you imagine just, like, you and your wiener friend are, like, beating somebody up, and then you find out the fucking Clint Walker and Jim Brown are his buddies, and they show up. Like, that's a pants-shitting situation right there.
Again, man, the imagery there. Charles Bronson's 5'9", I think.
Oh, really?
Is what they list him as.
I would have guessed. I guess probably a Hollywood height. Yeah. Like, he's a fucking midget. Like, I think he's a bit shorter than that.
I would imagine, like, I might be a little taller than he was.
That's very possible. He's looking Tom Cruise tall if he's a fucking inch.
And so these dudes that are beating him up, the one's a little bigger than him, and the other one's
just like a doughy dork, though.
Yeah, like, one's, like, maybe 2 inches taller, and the other one's, like, maybe full 6 feet. Uh-huh. But then these two just fucking brick shitters come through.
So much man meat up on
just
that,
like,
screen.
Oh, good God. Like, oh, yeah, I'd never want to have to throw fisticuffs with those two.
No, never. My next note is just hookers.
Yeah.
You got anything in between that? I think, like, we finish our training, and then Lee Marvin's like, good job. You guys learned how to do all your stuff.
Yeah.
My notes, I'm going to get you some hookers.
They jump Bronson.
Get them
got
a bunch
them
of
a
whores.
Bunch of whores, yeah.
I really like this scene because they have, like, a little cotillion or whatever. These guys haven't shaved or showered yet. They still just look like, you can smell them coming off the screen. They look like fucking scruffy assholes. Ugh. And they just bring in a bus full of whores to, like, slow dance with them. And there's just this real awkward just, like, standoff where these fucking women just have to, like, stand there and be stared at by these greasy fucking soldier prisoners.
It's really,
you could cut the tension with a knife.
It's really pre-Me Too, you know?
Oh, yeah. I really like, not only do the officers bring this in and they're, like, slapping the girls on the asses and they're like, get to work.
Yeah.
Like, but, like, it's just, like, there's 7 hookers and there's, like, 6 that are, like, young women and there's just one old one.
Yeah.
Like, one really old one.
There's, like,
I'm just wondering, like, who's gonna end up fucking the old one?
There's, like,
we never see, like, this. I feel like this has been a nice little character moment. Which one of these guys fucks the old one?
There's 2 that are old. One's just like, ooh, you're kind
of
old.
One of them is a grandma.
Oh, yeah. One of them's, like, legitimately Mrs. Garrett from Facts of Life.
Yeah,
like,
hell yeah. But not as hot.
What?
Like,
I would
have definitely thrown one in Miss Garrett before this lady.
And then the other one's just like,
oh, she's got a real bad Cockney accent, too.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, she did. There was one that was like a blonde that was, like, old, but just kind of like Charles Bronson old, which ironically ended up matching up with Charles Bronson.
Right, yeah.
He's dancing with her.
Okay.
So I guess it works out.
I guess, yeah, we're going to say Bronson. Bronson jumped on the grenade then.
Yeah, he's like, hey, I punch my own weight.
He's either a pervert or he's the hero of the night. We don't know.
So after this, old Colonel DeBoers or whatever his name was.
Yeah, fucking Breeder, I think it is.
Yeah, he's all mad because he got made to look like an idiot.
I was made to look like an idiot. There's a loud party going on with whores. Like, I'm fucking putting an end to this shit.
He's like, I'm showing up in your little camp. I'm going to get answers. You're going to tell me who the shit you are.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm the guy, man.
He's got them all lined up. got him at gunpoint, all his little soldiers are around, but fucking Lee Marvin rolls up on the scene, climbs a tower, and just starts machine gunning everybody.
What a crazy asshole.
he's got a real dumb look on his face when he's climbing up this tower, just like, and then we get one of, first one was when he shot the fucking rope that old Jimenez is climbing up, then this one he starts shooting around the ground and like, hey, leave my man alone. But like, it's just another close-up shot of him maniacally firing a machine gun in all directions.
You know he's having real flashbacks.
Oh, you got to. Anytime you can't these be guns fucking like off. Building all these military barracks and shooting guns and shit and like not just be like flashing back to the actual craziest fucking war in human history that you were a part of.
Yeah. Ugh.
These guys were doing a lot of post fucking shoot drinking. I gotta imagine. Just like not in a party situation, but just like everybody in a fucking murder shed type thing.
Oh, I gotta.
Everyone turned their fucking trailer into murder sheds on this set. I guarantee it.
I got a drinking story regarding this movie, but we haven't gotten to a scene yet, so we'll get to it.
To be continued, I guess. But I don't know. This is where the whole bet was made, where there's some war games and like you got to fucking capture Breeder's compound and then we'll let you do the mission. But if you don't, this whole thing's called off because
this scene
you fucking got hookers and stuff.
This scene really rips off Major Payne. That's the way I feel.
Okay, I don't remember the general conceit of Major Payne. What was the plot there? What did Major Payne have to do?
They had to go like steal a trophy from a building. In a war game
that sounds
type
right.
situation.
I don't really understand entirely what war games are, and I feel like this is the segment of the movie where I started to zone out a little bit. Like, they're pulling a lot of clearly out of the usual bounds of rules of war game stuff. They're, like, switching what colored armband they have and, like, stealing other people's uniforms and dressing up as something they're not. Yeah. I'm just like, I'm not following this stuff and what they're doing right here. Like, I don't know what their objective is and how they're doing it at all.
And another excellent scene of action has to be the war game scene when they were playing red blue team and they infiltrate the red team by switching armbands. Jacked the ambulance and with Major Armbrust are played by George Kennedy tagging along, only to get halfway thrown off mid travel when they take down Colonel Braid's forces in the war games.
Everybody that's in charge is kind of like, oh, I understand what's going on here. These guys are crafty.
Mm-hmm.
I'm all for this.
We're really coming around on these dirty dozen.
So they end up winning the war games.
Oh,
I
want to talk about before the war games when they're yelling at fucking Marvin for getting the whores. I loved when like he was like, there was a fucking party, there was seven, you know, civilian women who took part. And then fucking old boy does that great spit take when Lee Marvin goes like, oh yeah, they certainly took part. Fucking Borgnine does a full-on spit take.
Yeah.
It was tremendous. I laughed out loud at his goofy spit take in the middle of this fucking manly shoot-em-up movie.
Yeah.
Throw some Borgnine comedy in there. That's wonderful.
Yeah. I should have had him farting.
I don't know why they didn't. They should have had his butt mic. You know he was farting. Just get that shit mic'd up.
Borgnine just walking through a casino farting. Casually.
Just fucking eyebrows flailing out in all directions.
pardon me, ma'am.
He's got the craziest damn eyebrows I've ever seen in my life.
Oh, he's a something, all right.
I love him.
So they win the war games, and now they're like, hey, congratulations.
Everybody's happy.
You can go to war now.
10-second just close-up of George Kennedy cackling, which I think needs to be a gif. If that's not a gif out there on the fucking internet, somebody make that sweaty George Kennedy just... I'm so happy we won the war games. Yeah. I'm not even in the Dirty Dozen. I've fallen in love with them.
They have captured my heart. So their big reward is they get to go die in war.
Go do a suicide mission.
Yeah.
This is when we get one of the scenes that really sticks out to me, which is the plan. Going over the plan.
Yeah.
This is one of the things that not enough action movies do, is they tell you what's going to happen. Fucking Lee Marvin's made a fucking Doc Brown style fucking model to show us what's going to happen at the chateau. Yeah. We get like a 12 point like rhyming thing to where they keep repeating it, like what the plan is. Like, first we do this, second we do this.
One,
like,
two, Freddy's coming for you.
There's a little montage here. You get to run through everything that's happening with little dolls on the little models, and you just know the layout of this place. You know the timeline of what's supposed to happen in the mission. You know where everybody's supposed to be. So that when stuff starts going wrong in the fucking mission, you know that it's going wrong.
Yeah.
It creates tension, and you know, makes greater stakes. It's not just like scenes of people shooting, guys running in, cameras are everywhere, something happens. There's a structure. They've structured their action scene so that it's actually engaging and it means something.
Man, it's a long movie. There's a lot going on.
Oh, boy,
is
it.
Stuff not going on, but the thing this movie does well is they give you enough of the characters to care, and like you said, it builds to this tension, and it's like, it's very palpable. You're like, oh man, like I genuinely feel tense right now.
The end mission
this.
Here is just like the whole third act of the movie, and it's just like straight up like 40-minute action scene, like unbroken.
Yeah,
which is cool, especially for like the fucking 1960s.
Yeah, that's true. For
this
67.
Is pre like the action movie, quote unquote, being a thing as we understand it to be today.
I mean, there's war movies and shit with like bang, 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 shoot, shoot. I fell over, I'm dead. But like this was a little grittier.
And it builds itself around big action, like fucking set pieces in a way. Like war movies, like sure, you got to have fucking action scenes because there's war happening. But like, you know, that this is just like a couple big set pieces and like the connective tissue around them, which is totally the formula for like 80s action movies.
Right. And from what I understand, another thing that sets this one apart from other war movies at the time, this was the first American war movie to depict war crimes.
Yeah, the Americans being asshole criminals and not just like, because if they wanted apparently John Wayne to play the Lee Marvin part, and he was just like, well, I'm not going to do that. Like, this is making Americans look like fucking criminals. Like, fuck that.
Supposedly, there was a storyline originally where, like, Lee Marvin's character was banging some woman whose husband was overseas.
Ooh.
And, like, I guess John Wayne had a real problem with that one. He's like, I'm not no Jody.
I'll be in the Searchers where I kill my granddaughter because she was raped by Indians.
That's right.
I'm not going to play a character who dallied around on his wife.
That's right, Pilgrim.
That's immoral.
I'm not mowing another man's yard, Pilgrim.
I think I heard, too, Jack Palance was going to play the Telly Savalas role, but didn't want to because they wouldn't take out him being racist.
Yeah, yeah.
totally cool with him being a serial killer rapist, but, like, I'm not playing no fucking racist on screen, man.
Women, I don't care. That's fine. You kill them all the time, but come on. Black people are our
equals.
I love,
like, hearing about, like, ideas of, like, what was a liberal fucking, you know, like, idea back in the 60s. Yeah. Like, these guys think that they're making a stand for something, and then just, but also anything with, like, fucking women or whatever is just like, well, who gives a fuck about that?
And Jack Pan's like, I was down with that whole Olympics raising your fist stuff, man. Like, I was there.
Totally.
Hell yeah, dog.
I was getting blown by whores, and the tear was coming down my eye while I was watching it.
So they're at the big mission now. Everybody's got their places. They go
Not Jimenez.
Not Jimenez.
We learned that he landed in some trees and broke his neck.
And an apple tree. Poor
some
bitch.
I like the specificity of it being an apple tree.
What took you guys so long? Jimenez died in an apple tree.
It's that extra
broke
little
his neck.
Extra little detail that makes it seem like not a lie.
Also, like, wasn't it really weird watching Charles Bronson without a mustache?
Yeah, it is kind of strange. Like, you definitely, coming up in our era, you think of fucking 70s Charles Bronson. You don't think of, like, kind of young, clean-cut Charles Bronson as being a thing that existed.
It's like, it almost makes him relatable not having the mustache.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Whereas maybe it's just because my dad had a mustache, so it's like,
oh, that would be traumatic right there.
You think of that,
grew up
like
with a mustachioed father,
yelled at, and it's I don't want no smoke.
Yeah, that's why I wasn't so into Bronson movies when I was a kid. He was just too much of a dad figure.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Because I really enjoy like catching up with this shit now. Like right. I said that I missed when I was a kid.
Yeah.
Whereas like Chuck Norris was the other guy, like I was saying. But like I watch his shit now and most of it's pretty bad.
It's like I'd rather be watching Bronson movies.
You need to dig deeper into this Bronson catalog.
As a kid, it's like, I don't want to watch Bronson. He's just going to yell at me through the TV.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Make me turn off the lights and yell about the NIPSCO bill.
Go downstairs and clean up your G.I. Joes.
Ugh.
So what happens? Old guy breaks his neck and they're like, ah, whatever. We'll go with
We'll get one of these Canadian dudes whose name you don't know to do his part
Gilpin
of the mission.
Or Yepstein.
He's got
to
just climb up and blow up the fucking radio tower. It's cool.
Yeah, somebody can do it.
I like also like the whole story was just like Jimenez was the only guy who couldn't get up that rope. So it was like, so why did he be the guy who was going to climb up and blow up the tower? Like pick somebody who's good at climbing.
It just worked storyline wise. All
I don't know. I just think there's some things that happen later too that make me think that maybe Lee Marvin just wasn't the best coach when it comes to handing out who does what job.
He's being a little bit of an asshole here.
I don't know. We'll get to it here in a second.
Too stubborn. So they sneak in. They get the guards at the gate by dressing up like Nazis.
I like to, like, we talk about this like it's the biggest fucking suicide mission of all time. Just like you got to go into this heavily guarded chateau where all the German higher-ups are, and they just roll up and shoot the two guys who are just chilling at the guard.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, now we're in.
We're officially in.
What a heavily fortified chateau this ended up being.
And, of course, the granddaddy of them all in that scene, in that movie, was when they finally raided the German chateau with Marvin's character and Bronson's character disguised as Nazis. And how they infiltrated and whooped all that Nazi ass.
So you got Lee Marvin following Bronson around. They're pretending like they're German officers because Bronson's the one who can speak German. You get everybody else fucking like taking their places on the little outside.
Right.
Get some shit going on the roof. We got to climb up there. The problem, the beef that I have is that, you know, once we sort of infiltrate and we get everything set up, we got like a couple of the guys who are going to be inside the chateau to take part in the killing of the German guys, along with old
Marvin. I see where you're going here.
Bronson. And the two they choose to be inside, around where all the Germans are the out-of-control serial killer and the black dude.
Yeah.
Like, is there any more of like a huge fucking risk of making this whole shit fall apart than having the out-of-control serial killer and the black dude be the ones trying to sneak around in the house where there's fucking Germans everywhere?
Not just the black dude, but the black dude
the
that's,
gigantic,
you know,
black dude.
6'5" and fills an entire door frame and you can't miss him.
Pretty sure you catch a glimpse of that guy out of the corner of your eye. You're not just like, oh, look at that other German.
No.
This is not what's going to happen.
That's correct, yeah. I would have sent like a Franco or something.
Wouldn't you know who won the pony? Fucking Telly Savalas goes nuts and kills a bitch, and this whole fucking mission just is instantly off the rails.
Oh, that's right. Because back when Lee Marvin got them all whores, Telly Savalas.
They put him on guard duty because they knew he'd like freak out if he was around women. Like,
don't you understand? You've sworn their souls to eternal damnation by partaking in whoring. You can't do that. And then he got to this final mission, was like, well, I have to kill everybody.
Now is my chance to go fucking nuts.
Y'all gotta die because you banged those whores earlier.
Stabs a blonde lady in the stomach.
A whore.
She screams.
A German whore.
Sort of gives away everything.
Scream. Sprechen.
Yeah, he's fucking
scream.
Whispering at her while he fucking like Sprechen. Slowly is putting a knife inside of her.
Sprechen.
It's a creepy little scene.
She
does
gets,
scream.
Like, creepily into it.
But it's kind of funny that, like, all the Germans are too fucking wild and out and drunk to care that, like, a woman screamed. They're just like, hell, whatever.
Yeah, they're like, old Jimmy the Nazi's really letting...
So, yeah, it's kind of a fake out. Like, you think that Telly Savalas has ruined the mission, but he doesn't really. But then second fake out on top of a fake out, because then he just starts shooting at his own guys and really does ruin the mission. Now, before everything could be put in place, there's gunfire everywhere. All the fucking Nazis are freaking out, fucking alarms sounding, everybody's trying to get into a bomb shelter.
Oh, yeah, the whole idea was they were supposed to go in there because all the highfalutin officers were going to be there, and they were going to kill all the high officers, and that was going to be bad for morale for the Germans.
D-Day's about to happen, their communication channels are all going to be broken down because half their officers have died in this fucking chateau banging whores. It's a solid plan.
Soon as old AJ Maggot shoots his gun off, one of the German soldiers is like, everybody that's a lieutenant or above, get in the bomb shelter.
Bronson rolls up on the guy trying to radio for help. He shoots him in the back, which is pretty cool. Whoever took Jimenez's place has comically had his legs stuck through the roof for a while. Can't get to the antenna, so he just throws some grenades at it, and that blows up. That's a pretty good job.
Yeah.
Does he die doing that? I don't know if we ever saw him again. Like, I was thinking, like, is he not able to get his leg out of that hole, so he just sacrifices himself by grenading the whole fucking roof with him on it?
Yeah, he never comes back down on him. Whatever. Yeah.
So he's probably, like, the first of them to die, other than the one that fucking old Maggot shot. This is when they all just start dropping like fucking flies here.
Yeah,
this isn't the sort of movie where, like, everybody's getting out alive.
Next.
Yeah, Donald Sutherland's out front playing a guard next to, like, the car. He fucking has some little hijinks where, like, a German guy is asking him for a cigarette and he can't speak German. He gets fucking smoked pretty early on. Does a real dramatic, like, 12-second long, just, like, slow die.
Like, sad eyes.
Yes. He's really shooting for, like, an Oscar there.
Almost got it, too.
Which might have worked. He was the only one of, like, the six nobodies who became a somebody from this movie, from what I understand.
It was my understanding that the whole where he's pretending to be the general and inspecting the ranks.
Yeah, that's a fun little scene.
That's what landed him his role in MASH.
Oh, cool. And then it was off to the fucking races.
Yeah, so there you go.
Somehow an ugly, ugly man became a Hollywood leading man.
Not only is he ugly, he like sounds like a weirdo when he talks.
Yeah, full on.
I'm Donald Sutherland. Weirdo.
So all the people are down in the bomb shelter. Old Lee Marvin and Charles Bronson do some quick thinking and just fucking bar the door from the outside too, so they can't get out. And they're like, these guys gotta breathe somehow. There's gotta be air vents. We'll just fucking dump a bunch of grenades and gasoline down the air vents and kill them all in one go.
Pretty strong plan.
It'll be just like, it wasn't our original plan, but I think it's a pretty solid way to do this shit.
This could be better. This might be quicker.
So then, like, basically the rest of this fucking third act is just, like, machine gunning happening. Like, soldiers are coming in from wherever, trying to get into the chateau. We're blowing up, like, all the fucking pathways in and then just machine gunning them. And just, like, everybody's trying to kick the fucking tops off these air vents so we could dump gasoline and grenades down, kill all these fucking Nazis. Yep. I think they did a pretty good job of, like, making 10 or 15 minutes of this movie of just trying to remove the tops of metal grated air vents pretty like tense and, like, interesting to watch.
It really did. It's like, come on, just get those off by now.
Eventually they do. They dump a whole lot of grenades and gasoline down those holes. Yeah. And that even goes on for a while, too. And I'm just like, I think you've done enough down there to
kill
every
too.
Nazi, like, 10 or 15 excessive. Fucking gallons of gasoline ago.
Well, the other part of that, though, was Franco was supposed to get them a vehicle to get to the bridge.
Yeah, that's right.
And he was struggling to find.
He was having troubles. Eventually, we get, like, a tank thing. Then that ends up, like, being fucking hitched up to something it was pulling, and we got to separate those two things.
Yeah, anti-aircraft gun.
Yeah, the whole fucking plan's going to hell. As it's going to hell, more and more of the guys are just getting machine gunned throughout the process of this.
So this big truck that they got to drive, right?
Yeah.
Old Lee Marvin gets behind the wheel. Franco starts it up.
Dad gets to drive.
And Lee Marvin's like, get the fuck out of here. I'm driving. And he's like, I want
to drive. Dad gets
to drive. I'm driving. So Lee Marvin hated this movie, hated making this movie. The night before this scene where he's supposed to drive the truck, he goes to a nearby bar, gets wasted.
There you go.
No shows. The shoot the next morning. Everybody's
that's not very professional.
Freaking out. And they're like, oh, my shit. Like, where's this fucking guy at? He's got to drive.
Somebody
this.
Put a gray wig on Jim Brown. We're shooting this scene one way or another.
They got to shoot the scene, blah, blah, blah. One of the producers finds him at the bar, gets him, brings him to where they're shooting.
It's a classic shaking the hero out of a drunken stupor so he can come fucking produce.
Lee Marvin
but in real life.
Face plants out of the car.
Love it.
To which Charles Bronson says, Ah, oh, fuck you, Lee. And then they proceeded to pour coffee down his throat until he sobered up enough.
To drive a military tank truck.
Yeah.
Jim Brown's the one who actually drops the unpinned grenades into these four things to blow up all of the fucking Nazis and start a big fire. But he gets machine gunned in the process of doing that.
He does, unfortunately.
Right after he gets that fourth one in. And this is, like, one of the craziest things about this movie is that, like, the big fucking climactic finale isn't just, like, busting through a wall, infiltrating something. It's just brutally murdering dozens of people trapped in a little hole who are screaming and pleading for their lives, just burning them alive. And it's just like, they were Nazis and Nazi-sympathizing hookers. Like, they're scum. We're just going to kill them like fucking animals.
Speaking of casinos.
And it was fine.
I was at a casino in Memphis as a young youth.
Who'd you kill?
No, I didn't kill anybody. They had the tank truck from the Dirty Dozen there.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it was like one of them Hollywood casinos, and they had like just movie props everywhere.
I knew a guy who scraped his elbow trying to take a picture with the A-team van.
Ted and I got a picture inside of the A-team van. He got to hold the machine gun, though. I was upset.
God, that's a fun story.
Yeah. World of Wheels.
So from what I understand, they actually built this chateau for the movie. Like,
yeah.
It was just sort of like a facade of a building.
Correct.
But they built it so good it like wouldn't blow up right.
Right. They're having troubles with it.
Some good craftsmanship. You don't hear stuff like that anymore.
Well, it's a different era.
They don't build
them
that way anymore.
They don't make them like that anymore.
It looks good on screen when they blow it up. Like there's a lot of explosions.
Oh, fantastic.
There's stuff flying everywhere.
Fires.
Big old fireballs.
Fireballs.
A lot of screaming Nazis getting burned alive.
The way it should be.
And, fucking everybody's dead except, the two officers and Charles Bronson. That's the end of the movie.
Yep.
We meet all these guys, fucking get to know them, get to like them. They commit war crimes.
Correct.
Like, legit, full on, no question about it, war crimes. They die in the process. Fucking that's it. Hope you had a good time.
Lee Marvin.
This was the Dirty Dozen.
The military police guy. Charles Bronson.
And you get some like narration at the back end that's George Kennedy being like, oh, fucking Charles Bronson got his pardon and everybody else's family members were notified that they fucking served nobly and died. And like the, and I'm just like, I can hear him sweating over the audio of just fucking recording this voiceover narration.
Drip. But they did it.
Yeah, they did it. Hopefully we've killed like 4 hours watching this thing with our fucking dads and our grandpas, Thanksgiving afternoon, we did it. Victory all around.
Did they do a sequel of this?
They did, but it was like much later. I think it was like the 80s or something. And I think it was just like, talk about Lee Marvin not liking this movie. I think it was just like a sad Lee Marvin just cashing a fucking check. Yeah. Like, all right, give me 12 more guys or whatever.
I'm 80, but as long as that check clears.
They called it like the Dirty Dozen colon something. It's a shame they didn't go with the Filthy 13. Like,
they should've.
That name's right there for a fucking sequel. Give me a break.
Yeah. Well, we'll look into that.
We'll look into that during this break. You'll hear about some coming attractions, what we got coming up next, and then...
It's like coming.
Dirty Dozen will enter our regular closing segment. You know what it's called? It's fucking Judgment Day.
That's it.
This ain't no game, Flash.
Joe Hallenbeck's a private detective. Who's run out of luck?
If you touch me again, I'll kill you.
Two for two.
Told you.
Jimmy Dix.
I like Prince.
Is an ex-quarterback who was thrown out of football.
Another tragic tale of wasted youth.
You're nobody.
Shh. Don't tell anyone.
They were trying to clean up their acts.
You vacuum, I'll dust.
When they got dragged into the dirty world of sports corruption.
So you're gonna bribe some senators to legalize gambling?
Legalize sports gambling. Now.
Son, we're going to a ball game.
They've got one shot.
What am I gonna do? Point at the bad guys and shoot!
To get the goods. on the bad guys.
This once, I would like to hear you scream.
Play some rap music. It's out of ideas, man. Take your best shot.
If they don't kill each other first.
That was a bomb?
That had a hell of a factory recall.
Bruce Willis. Damon Wayans. The Last Boy Scout.
Danger's my middle name.
Mine's Cornelius. Don't tell anybody I kill you.
Seatbelt, please.
Columbia Pictures presents Arnold Schwarzenegger.
To be or not to be.
Last action hero.
Not to be.
Rated PG-13. Advanced screening Thursday starts Friday everywhere.
Let's get into Judgment Day here. This is where we fucking go out there and comb the internet for reactions to the movie that we talked about, and we see what you, the people, thought about it.
Oh, we have to pay off our teases.
We make up our own decision. Oh, what did we tease?
There's four of these movies and one television series.
Okay, yeah, that's right. All going on in the mid to late 80s. They went Dirty Dozen crazy in the late 80s.
67, 85, 87, 88, the final movie. And
somehow they brought back Telly Savalas for a couple of them?
For the last two movies.
I mean, was he playing Maggot?
No, he was playing Major Wright.
How do you bring back Maggot and just be like, it's a different guy?
This is
Maggot's fucking twin cousin.
He was
this
20
one's
years
not a serial rapist.
He was 20 years older.
I guess
TV's
that's true.
Kojak by this point. Yeah, I don't know.
Judgment Day. Usually I go to the extremes here, and I pick a couple of one bullet reviews and a couple of five bullet reviews. This week I've changed up the format just a little
Familiar with our format.
We're gonna run the whole gamut here. I've got five reviews, one of each bullet rating right here. So we're gonna see a little bit of what everybody thinks from the whole thing.
Okay.
In general, if you know, a lot of the negative reviews are just people who think it's disgusting that they depicted so many war crimes on screen and they whine about that. A lot of the good reviews are just lame old men rambling and rambling, trying to show off how much they know about war movies and like war and stuff.
I like the movie.
So that's not good. There's a lot of boring reviews you got to wade through here if you're talking Dirty Dozen with people. But I found one.
Nate's doing the work for you.
From
listener.
Each fucking bullet rating right here. So we're going to start with the one bullet review.
Okay.
See people who didn't like it, and then we're going to move up. This first one bullet review is from Letterboxd user Katrina, who says, "Straight male films is all the same." One bullet review from Katrina. Very concise. I'm keeping a couple of them concise here. I think that's a good point. Really good point. We're going to flesh out some of the negativity here in this second review, though. It's a two-bullet review from Letterboxd user Nathan Heredia. Fellow Nathan here.
It's not you?
It's not me.
Okay.
He says, "The Dirty Dozen is basically the same plot as DC's Suicide Squad, and quite honestly, I'd rather watch the shit fest that is Suicide Squad. The characters are all unlikable and annoying. Nothing happens until over an hour and a half into the film. This is just the beginning of Dirty Dozen's issues. There's absolutely no style to it. Similar to a turkey at Thanksgiving, the film is an overall dry and dull experience." Threw this one in here because of the Thanksgiving shout-out. I didn't.
You did.
This is fucking kismet right here.
You wrote this the other day.
"Even in the most exciting part of the movie, the actual mission, I couldn't shake the feeling of total boredom. Despite strong performances from Lee Marvin and Charles Bronson, The Dirty Dozen was a total letdown." Two bullets from Nathan Heredia over on Letterboxd. This next one really stood out to me as just having a whole untold story, if you read between the lines here.
Okay.
This is a three-bullet review from Amazon user Renee Bose. She says, "He likes it. I bought it for someone." Three bullets from Amazon user Renee Bose.
Yeah, you should. Yeah, you're. Yeah.
Ooh, this sounds like somebody's got a special someone.
Absolutely.
She's trying to woo old man movies. Okay, this we're getting more into like some solid opinions here, some real thoughts in this 4-bullet review from IMDb user Richie. Likes the movie at a 4-bullet level. He says, "Dirty Harry came later. Dirty is implied that the characters do what it takes to get the mission done. Okay. Dirty Harry demonstrated that in his movies, always prevailing, but with a controversy as to how he did it.
Sure.
In this movie, dirty also applies to stained, as each man was not only dirty, but dirt too. In the end and throughout this movie, this is what it took to get this job done. The same tactics are used today by the CIA and various military, as in Navy SEALs, Marine Recon, Green Beret, and Special Forces. War is about winning, not etiquette or necessarily fair play. The Germans believed anything goes, as did the Japanese, but Americans thought it better for morale if we came up with rules of engagement for POWs, better referred to as the Geneva Convention. In this movie, it starts with men having nothing to lose and acting foolish and goofy. But stay tuned, because when it matters, these boys turn into killers and bet all they have to do it, too. Nice movie to eat along with and snack with a tasty drink. Enjoy all these stars in one place delivering their memorable lines. By the way, I always look to see if a movie is a watch again, and this one doesn't wear out." 4 bullets from IMDb user Richie, who gives off some fucking Telly Savalas serial killer vibes, yeah. If you're asking me.
Yeah.
My skin crawled reading that thing for the first time.
Yeah.
Okay, Over the Moon review here. Somebody who really liked it. This is a 5-bullet review from an IMDb user named Pissed Off.
Pissed.
That's PISTOFF.
Giving it a perfect review.
5 bullets. "This movie has guts. If ever there were one movie made by men for men, this is it. I saw this first when I was 5. I watched it with my dad, and since then have not yet found a man who can say anything bad about this. The cast reads like a list of movie tough guys from the late 60s and early 70s. Borgnine, Bronson, Brown, Cassavetes, Savalas, Ryan, Jitjel, Sutherland, Kennedy, and the toughest of the toughs, Lee Marvin. Lee Marvin is so tough he'd smack around Superman just for wearing tights. Even in Delta Force, when he was really old, Lee Marvin was still the toughest guy on the screen. This movie fits the standard men on a mission plot. Simple but effective. They must kill lots of Nazis. Where are movies like this today?" 5 bullets from IMDb user Pissed Off.
Kids don't know what Nazis are anymore, man. Nazis, I don't know what to tell you.
War crimes.
Just don't know what to tell you.
Fucking kids are dressing like Nazis and getting their little fucking white power haircuts these days. Need to sit them down and make them watch The Dirty Dozen and then slap the shit out of them.
Is my turn?
Yeah, it's your turn to go.
Overall, this movie is a 5 out of 5. And didn't I already mention, this was like the Expendables of the 60s. With likes of Marvin, Bronson, Clint Walker of Cheyenne, of this hit Western series, Cheyenne, Sutherland, and Jim Brown, who was a football player, who in the 70s was a big name blaxploitation star. Which, I'm going to say overall, 5 out of 5. Subscribe. Enjoy.
So, this movie, I watched all of it. Uh-huh. It was really, really long.
So long.
Which I don't like. It had some things in it that didn't really completely make sense. Like,
oh, no.
With like, hey, why are you letting Maggot do that and this and that? And why are you just letting a lot of this happen?
Like, literally, they should have just had Maggot die, quote unquote, in a training accident first day. Like, get rid of that motherfucker.
Absolutely.
Whoops, there was live ammo in that?
There's a lot of great performances, like the aforementioned Maggot, mm-hmm. Telly Savalas. Why do we hate him so much? Because he played a very convincing, creepy sociopath.
Yeah, he sure did.
So it worked, you know? Lee Marvin's good. Charlie Bronson, you know, mm-hmm. real tour de force.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Everybody was great.
Famous French actor, Charlie Bronson.
Yeah. Even Jim Brown.
Mm-hmm.
He's a football player. Yeah.
You could see why he was like, fuck football. I'm going to be an actor now.
And he was good in it.
I get many less injuries acting.
Yeah.
It's a much easier job.
I don't know what CTE is, but someday I could possibly kill my entire family and myself. I'm going to be an actor instead.
Smart move, yeah. Mr. Brown.
Y'all don't realize he retired at the height of his career. He was like the most successful ever.
He already won a Super Bowl. Yeah. Who gives a fuck? It's all downhill from there. Leave him wanting more.
So, you know, the killing, the explosions that they do, coupled with the characters, mm-hmm. the, you know, the acting and this and that,
mm-hmm.
it does make it a good movie.
All right.
It does.
All
it, right. it is a good cool. movie. Again, not without its flaws. The 2.5 hours.
Ooh.
It's good. Ooh. It wasn't like, oh, this is really long. I didn't feel it too
the
bad.
The only little draggy spot I get is during the war right. game shit.
Yeah.
That sort of felt like, I don't know how much of this we need.
But I'm going to go, this movie's a little better than good. I'm giving it 3.5 bullets.
3.5 bullets is a strong showing for the Dirty Dozen. My final thoughts is that there's a lot of fun sequences in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's maybe some filler that can be cut out in mm-hmm. between there. We get like 20 minutes cut out of this. I'm going to like it a lot more.
Oh, yeah.
But, however, it does fill that role, I keep saying, of the super long movie that can just be watched while you fart and are in a turkey coma and mm-hmm. it just eats up a whole afternoon. You get old men staring at it so you don't have to talk to them about shit. It's just a perfect distraction for the old coots in your family. Cassavetes is fucking awesome. I think he steals the movie from everybody.
Yeah,
fucking
I didn't
elevates
mention him.
It.
Good call.
Marvin's like the solid brick it's built around. I think there's just a lot of really great nuts and bolts filmmaking going on here from an old Hollywood director who knew what the fuck he was doing, which I love.
Mm-hmm.
It's fucking coherent to watch. It's not like the bullshit that comes out now. That old whore, I fell in love with her. What can I say? She's my dream woman.
The old British
slag? The old
slag.
One, yeah, with all the bright red lipstick and the terrible accent. I'm going to dream about her tonight.
Yeah, she's
4 bullets. Dirty Dozen's a classic. I've loved it my whole life. Solid fucking 4 bullets in my book.
She's a real chav, and so are you, Nate.
Not even minding that 2.5 hours. Me and my chav friends are going to drink some fucking 40s and hang out in Adidas gear and watch this shit tomorrow.
Nice. I'd watch it. It's good.
The Chateau Raid is such a classic fucking scene.
It really is. Just takes a long time to get there.
Fucking, that was it. That was Go Nuts November. Fucking, our tribute to the troops is coming to an end.
Yeah.
Fucking, now it's going to be Christmas time. Fucking December, it's Christmas time.
Christmas.
Do you think we've got a whole fucking Christmas theme going for the month of December, Matt? We do. Spoiler alert. Fucking, we always do. We're on top of these fucking things.
If there's one thing you and I talked about years before this stupid podcast ever existed, it was 80s, well, not just 80s, but action Christmas movies.
Oh, that's very true. So we're fucking spending
the
whole month just, you know, celebrating the king of 80s action Christmas movies. Fucking December, it's fucking Black Christmas. The screenplays of Shane Black. We're doing fucking Shane Black movies all goddamn month, starting next week with The Last Motherfucking Boy Scout.
Oh, man.
It's going to be a fun one. I'm looking forward to this Christmas season. Jingle bells.
Yippee, yippee-yah, yippee-yo, yippee-yay.
I'm going to be making so many boozy nogs. I'm going to
be
watching so many buddy cop movies. I want you all to be right there with me.
That strip club scene, man.
Let's save it. Keep it in your pants, buddy. We got a whole fucking podcast to do next week.
Good morning, Joseph. I love that movie, man. Well, 5 stars.
Okay.
Are we doing stars?
Next week's canceled, I guess.
10 stars.
We've taken care of it right
All
here.
Of them. Oh, tune in next week, and maybe I'll be serious on Baby Oil and Blow. Stay single.
It's a long road when you're on your own, and it hurts when they tear your dreams apart.